right, folks, welcome back to our very special April 2024 event month that we've got going on here at Catching Up on Cinema. As you were no doubt already aware, throughout all of April 2024, Catching Up on Cinema has changed to Catching Up on Kayfabe, : The Road to No Way Out. It's, of course, a wrestling talk podcast wherein myself and Kyle have been talking about WWF/WWE programming from the year 1998, specifically some of the episodes of Raw that preceded and include the No Way Out of Texas pay-per-view event from 1998. Last week, of course, we made the jump from the road to No Way Out to the actual event proper. And, of course, I brought a good buddy of mine along. That would be Richie. From the Super Media Bros podcast to join us. We've been having a great time with him on the show, but we went ahead and split the No Way Out discussion in half, in twain. So this here is going to be the second half of the discussion that we had with Richie. Anyway, hope you enjoy it. Welcome back to Catching Up on Kayfabe. The Nation. We cut to the Nation. Yeah, their theme music is simple but effective. I would say that much. We have the Nation, and we see that Farouk has beef with The Rock, which he's kind of airing out here during this promo. But he's like, "We're gonna push past it. Everybody's gonna fall in line," as he says. But he's not the main player in this promo. He's the one saying the words. Like, he's the guy on the mic. But you guys, tell me, what's actually happening during this promo?
I think that The Rock is basically stamping himself as the next biggest thing because I think this is the moment, honestly, because he's hitting him with the eyebrows. Is he giving the belt? Is that what he's saying? He's hitting him with the belt. That was Aaron Rodgers' big thing, was the belt. I was laughing. This is pretty good. Hitting him with the eyebrow, quite a bit of eyebrow. A lot of fun. Mouthing
the eye rolls too. The eye rolls.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'll tell you, he did his job perfectly because you know what the job was? I don't remember the fucking thing that Farouk was saying.
Exactly.
All I remember is The Rock. That's all I remember.
All I know, this is the first time I've heard Farouk talk, and I'm like, oh my God, he's got a deep voice. Like, it's commanding.
Ron and Simmons is a scary son of a bitch.
I'm like, damn. I don't know a word he just said because The Rock is completely dominating this promo or whatever you want to call this thing.
Yeah, no, it's pretty incredible, actually. Just The Rock, just through nothing but pantomime, just through facial expressions and movements, just completely steals all the oxygen in the room. It's pretty impressive. Like, this is some acting shit. And he's mugging like crazy. And as Richie had pointed out, I think before the mics heated up, this clip has been used many places. Like, it's like a well-known meme of sorts that even non-wrestling fans are aware of. Yeah, because it's just so classic. Oh. Like, it's just so entertaining. But it's like, this is actually where it comes from. I never knew that this was the source. But it's more famous than the actual pay-per-view, basically.
Right. He blows out the side of his mouth, looks over, and then he does, like, the, like, circular eye roll and looks, like, breaks the fourth wall. And, you know, that's the gif. And I get that reaction meme. Like, I see it everywhere. I remembered being like, oh, that was from that one pay-per-view they did in February of 98 that wasn't too good.
Well, at least we got that. At least we got
exactly.
That. Anyway, we move on to an actual match, finally, after this parade of promos. So we have something they're calling the War of Attrition, which is just a fancy way of saying multi-man tag match, basically.
Why wouldn't they just call it the War of Nutrition with all these big motherfuckers in there?
I mean, Steph did point out, like, mostly what they're saying, like, tremendous athlete. I mean, this is what I say about Josh Allen every week. I'm like, tremendous athlete, great competitor, you know, but they're just like, great athlete, great athlete. He's a great athlete the whole time. I'm like, that, yeah.
That's JR's shtick. JR likes to try to legitimize wrestling by bringing in people's, like, actual athletic accomplishments and accolades. Like, he likes to point out that D'Lo is a certified public accountant or whatever.
Fucking Mark Henry is a power lifter. Like,
yeah, no, he likes to bring up people's football careers or powerlifting. He likes to bring legitimacy to the table by talking about their careers.
I like how he talks about The Rock's football playing. I'm like, let's be honest. His dad was a professional wrestler. Let's just say what it is. His dad was a professional wrestler. So that, I think,
yeah, he's part of two wrestling dynasties. Both sides of the bloodline are wrestling royalty. Like his destiny was wrestling. Like, football didn't go anywhere, honestly. Like, it wasn't great.
If, like, it quacks like nepotism, it's, yeah.
No, like, Vader and Bradshaw, I believe, both played in the NFL. Rock, I don't think, played in the NFL.
No, he played in the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, Canadian Football League, see?
Yep.
So not
Blue Chip. But this was the era of Blue Chip. Every time The Rock was on screen, JR had to say, Blue Chip! His go-to.
That's right. So
this was an interesting matchup. We got the Nation of Domination versus Ken Shamrock, and then I think this is Chains and Skull, or 8-Ball. I'm not sure.
8-Ball. I think it's all three of them, right?
I think, like, it's all three of them.
Yeah, it's the 2-Ball-ies and the one with the hair.
Yeah, it is all three of them. Holy shit. Yeah, it's before Crush, I think. Either before Crush joined or when he joined, because I think that was his stable, because he left the Nation of Domination to form this group.
That's what was confusing me, was because my memories of these biker fellas had Crush in the mix, but I guess he was like the Dinobots or whatever, where it's like there's that one Dinobot who everybody forgets about because, like, he wasn't in the movie, where it's like there's he's the Stegosaurus Dinobot. I don't even remember his name. It's like Slag Sludge and Swoop and Grimlock or whatever. And then that other guy who nobody cares about.
I feel like he might have been injured or out of the company at this point.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right. But he seems to be like, in case of emergency, insert Crush. Like, that's kind of the MO. Where it's like we have a stable that needs just one more big guy. It's like, hey, Crush, what you up to?
Right. And Bryan Adams was always a pretty solid worker. I mean, he was in the NWO for a period of time too. So,
yeah, arguably more successful there, honestly, just in terms of consistency. Like, his position was more well defined. Anyway, Kyle, what were you getting at?
I was gonna say the reception of the Nation of Domination in this Texas crowd was questionable. Don't know if this is we're getting some boos here, and I'm like, are they? Now, I get if you're booing Rocky, that's his thing. Rocky sucks.
Yeah.
But we are definitely booing the rest of the Nation of Domination, and I'm not positive it's because of their character, if you get where I'm coming from here.
Yeah, we talked about this last week. It seems to be the case.
Okay.
I would agree, Kyle. I will point out, Ahmed Johnson is kind of on the other side to kind of balance things out a little bit. It's like
it's
like, it's a good thing that Ahmed Johnson's on the other team, is what I'm saying.
Strategically placed, I believe.
Yeah. I will point out, so Kyle had just said that Rocky sucks, or die Rocky die. These were common chants, and the Nation is getting booed. In terms of crowd pop, something that I found fascinating is that, one, Ken Shamrock got a huge pop, and he did last week too. Ken Shamrock was very over at this time. I kind of underestimated how over, though, because I always thought of him as being so limited in terms of his character and storytelling. Like, as an in-ring performer, he was pretty even hand. He could go. He and The Rock had plenty of good matches that I remember seeing and stuff. On top of that, Ahmed Johnson also had a moment. He had a very small moment, but a significant one, where he was also quite over with the crowd as well. Anytime he'd get in there and do anything, as limited as he could be at times, even in this match, he got a pretty big crowd pop. So it's just interesting to look back on and see that it's like these people that I kind of put in boxes in my mind as being like, they were okay. at the time, like even if it was for a small amount of time, they were quite successful. Like the crowd quite liked them. And yeah, Shamrock got a huge pop. And you know, our match starts off with some talk back and forth between the commentators about the word attrition, and JR is basically being pestered by Jerry King Lawler to define the word attrition. And you can tell he can't on the fly. So they just kind of go back and forth and goes nowhere. It's very cute.
Hey, JR, can you define woke for me? Well, no.
Either that or it's a yes followed by paragraph upon paragraph of like angry ramblings. Just wild, unfocused rage.
It becomes another New York Times best-selling book.
Jesus
just
Christ.
By itself.
But yeah, this match, thoughts, highlights from both of you.
Commentary. I think the commentary did it for me on this one. So there are two, I think, is it Chains and Skull, the two bald ones? They're mixing up their names throughout the match. And I believe Lawler at one point says, you know, they look a lot alike. And JR, without missing a beat, is like, they're twins.
There was some similar banter. There was some similar banter when those two were still known as Jacob and Eli Blue.
Gotcha.
Back in like 1995, they wrestled Lex Luger and British Bulldog in the opening match of Mania 11, and that's who they eventually became, were the twins in the
biker. Oh wow, the Allied Powers or whatever.
That's right.
Jesus Christ. What do we do with these fellas? What do we do with these two big bricks?
Make them bald and bikers.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, there's actually some pretty cool moves here. Like we have a lot of talent in the ring, and we get to see some cool stuff. There's a pretty impressive like splash from D'Lo. Like he goes almost coast to coast on, I forget who he lands it on, but it's pretty impressive. We do get Ahmed Johnson positioned with Mark Henry in kind of like a test of strength kind of thing. I was about to say it would be very bad booking if Mark Henry didn't come out on top of that, being as like that's the one thing that he has going for him at this moment in time.
Right.
Maybe book him strong. Maybe like the legitimate strongest man in the world at one point.
You remember this when Mark Henry and Vader had a tug of war? In the ring?
I don't, but Richie, how about you?
I feel like I do. Like during a match or its own thing, you mean?
Yeah, it was like during a match. They did a tug of war.
I feel like that happened somewhere. But I do also remember, I might be wrong here. Somebody out there in internet land is going to be like, you stupid motherfucker. But I think,
you dumb bitch.
I think they did a thing where, because like Mark Henry always tried to put over, like, you know, he was legitimately the world's strongest man at one point. So yeah, I think at one point they were doing a thing where like he's pulling a truck. You know what I mean? Like with the ropes, like a Mack truck or some shit. I think they did that at one point. I can't remember if it was with Vader, but I know Mark Henry was like, look at me, motherfucker. And he's like, I was just pulling shit. But yeah, heavy agree on booking Henry strong, because honestly, at this point, he's still a little green in the ring. Which Mark would go on to have a fantastic fucking run, like about 10 years after this. We're doing the fucking Hall of Pain and all that other shit that he was doing, like top tier work in my opinion. I think Mark Henry was one of the most underrated talents like later on. And admittedly, when I first watched this, I was like, oh man, that's going to be the guy that doesn't make it out of the Nation. Boy, how fucking wrong was I?
Yeah, actually, that's funny to look back on, because the Nation, it's like D'Lo would continue on just kind of D'Lo-ing for a long time. At one point, he'd get the chest protector, and he would hold, the European title for a while there. But, I mean, the comma at the time, most notable as the Godfather, perhaps, and formerly Papa Shango, the very late Papa Shango, if you get the WrestleMania reference.
Yes.
Papa Shango, who missed his cue and somehow got to keep his job. What the fuck? That's pretty impressive.
I know.
But, oh, Kyle's watching. He found the title.
July of 1998, these two men got into the ring and did the most boring thing you could do in the ring, a tug of war.
I mean, it's right up there with Akebono and Big Show doing a legit sumo contest. That was...
Oh, I forgot. I found that clip. Yeah, that was dumb.
Yeah, I remember Yokozuna and Vader. It was kind of a cool idea where it's like they have Yokozuna doing his sumo ready stance and Vader does the 3-point stance, and then they ran full steam at each other in the middle of the ring. That was pretty cool, actually. Football versus fucking sumo. Fuck yeah. Big Van Vader fears no man, feels no pain. Yeah, this is a pretty cool match. When The Rock is involved, there is, like, forgive the expression, electricity in the air. Yeah. Like, it just his moveset, his execution is legitimately pretty electric. Him going at it with Shamrock in particular, who he was feuding with for a very long time. The two of them do have some chemistry.
You have to make a gif of this this ending to this match of Shamrock with whatever he's doing to his ankles, but The Rock selling it like he's in pain, like flailing like a dead fish. Like, it's pretty great.
I will point out, Kyle, would you mind looking up The Rock doing a sharpshooter? Because he looks like he's taking the most agonizing taco shit you could ever take.
Every time.
And his sharpshooter is quite bad on top of that. But he looks like he is in agony while he's performing the sharpshooter on other people. He's a little too long for it.
You're too tall.
He's a long boy. The Rock is a long boy.
He's a long boy. Blue chip. He's a long boy.
Yeah. The reason Brett always looked so good with the sharpshooter is because Brett was 5'10". Yeah, he was stocky.
Yeah, he was stocky.
Yeah, and he made it look good. He made it look good when he put it on people that were bigger than him. That's when it looked really fucking cool. But, like,
nice,
you know?
Yeah, no, the Rock sharpshooter was always kind of questionable. But that face, that expression he's doing, the arch of his spine, it looks like he's taking a dump on their back.
Cena is not selling it. The Rock is in more pain than Cena, and Cena's on the receiving end of it.
I'm like, exactly. The match does end with... Oh, by the way, when D'Lo misses that moonsault, he took that bump like a champ, by the way. He even gets like some spit, like a cloud of mist coming out of his mouth. I don't know how that felt, but it looked painful. Shamrock does get a hot tag kind of at the end of the match. There's finally a big explosion, a big brawl where basically everybody just goes at it, where it's a hockey fight, basically. It's a street fight. And Shamrock gets to bust out his moves of doom. He gets a belly-to-belly suplex at the time, his signature slash finisher, an armbar followed by an ankle lock, which, as Kyle had said, he puts The Rock in and The Rock sells the shit out of it. Ankle lock has consistently been a very protected move in wrestling, inherited by Kurt Angle not too long after this, made very, very good use of it. Basically, if you're in it and you're not getting a rope break, you're not getting out of it. It's very rare that you just legitimately break it. But sure enough, The Rock, I believe, taps to it. And JR does the thing that only JR can do, where he just says somebody's name 3 times in succession, and it just gets your... Just get your heart pumping. Shamrock! 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 It's Shamrock. It's the wrestler's name. He killed him.
That killed him!
He killed him. He's dead.
As God is my witness, he is broken in half. Like, the less well-known one is, my God, the power.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
My brother was quick to point out that JR had the power. My God, the power. Michael Cole had the quickness.
Vintage.
Yeah, vintage. Vintage everything. From 2018, vintage.
Yeah. This move just happened a week ago. Vintage Orton.
Vintage Orton. My God, the power.
My God, the vintage power.
My God, the vintage power. Orton. This guy's my witness. He is broken in half. The Rock does tap. And The Rock and Farouk come to blows after the match. They slap each other around a bit. But Farouk gets him to fall in line. They do their power gesture, and the crowd, I believe, is booing as they're lined up, and they make their exit. So we're still still not pulling the trigger on The Rock breaking away from them, but it's like it's crystal clear and has been for quite some time. Even his ring attire, The Rock is his uniform. He's not wearing the uniform. Like he is a separate entity. It's just a moment. It's a matter of finding the right time to break him away and let him be what he'll become. We go backstage and we get an Austin promo, a very brief one.
Crowd picks up. You can definitely hear it. They're very excited. I don't know what he has to say here.
He says very little. Okay. He's with Michael Cole, Maggle Cole. If you're using a Bradshaw English, Maggle,
Maggle Cole,
Maggle Cole,
but Maggle Cole.
Yeah, basically Austin says something, kick ass. Oh hell yeah! And then he just takes off. Oh hell yeah, Bob. He's like, I don't know what you want from me, Michael Cole. Bye.
It's like Cole basically was just like, hey, how's it feel to, you know, be back in Texas or whatever? And pretty much Austin was just like, yeah, I'm not a sentimental man, but if you done whoop somebody's ass in Texas and you done something, now get the fuck out of here.
That's exactly what it was.
Again, they're probably standing like right next to the toilet or something. He's just like, he's
trying to take a piss.
Yeah, he's like, why now of all time?
Michael Cole heard the piss stream. Oh, I can get him now. He won't go anywhere. Son, if you don't turn around, I'm going to piss all over the front of your pants and say that you did it. It's like, bruh.
He should have done an LBJ promo or whatever, where it's like they have a boom mic over the toilet stall.
Oh my God. Speaking of that, please keep that. Put a pin in a boom mic hanging above. As we go to the next match.
Yeah. Thank you. On to the next, then. We get a Vader and Kane video package, which WWF video packages, their promo videos, are their department is just top dollar. Like, they know how to get you hyped for whatever the fuck. I love that we show the Undertaker going into the burning coffin, and we... cut to this crying woman. It's still real to her, damn it.
It's still real to me, damn it.
We're not talking about the Taker right now, though. We're talking about Vader and Kane. So we get to see them during this video package trade Tombstone pile drivers. It's pretty cool. And they've been feuding for a while in the absence of the Undertaker. So next match, obviously, is Vader versus Kane. Monster versus monster on monster violence, essentially, is what we got in store for us here. Big crowd pop for both entrances. So the crowd is pretty hot for both of these fellers. Stare down. I love stare downs. There's something special about big, tall guy and stout fella like going eye to eye, nose to nose with each other for just a second. It's just a cool thing.
Well, let's put this in perspective. One is 6'4", the other one's 7 feet tall. Like, there's a slight height difference, but we're also on another level of height difference here. Like, these are monsters.
Yeah. No, I mean, Land of Giants, as they often called the WWF. But thoughts?
I did not like this match. Does Kane get any better? I feel like he's not great. He's not good in this.
This is still during that time period where Kane has only just started as Kane. He debuted in October at Bad Blood 1997 in the Hell in a Cell match that Shawn and Taker had. And he's had a few high profile, you know, feuds. Like, he had just finished up a feud with Mick Foley not long before this, I believe. And, you know, people out there that don't know this, which I'd be surprised if they didn't. I mean, Kane was one of those characters that stuck for Glenn Jacobs because he was Isaac Hagen DDS for a short period of time in 1995 through 96. And then he was the fake Diesel for a little bit. And then they moved him to Kane, and Kane's gimmick morphed a bunch over the years. As far as his in-ring style, the clothing that he would wear, he was still kind of like directed to be that Michael Myers-esque type monster heel wrestler where he worked stiff. And I don't mean working stiff in the ring, like throwing snug punches. I mean, he was pretty much told, wrestle like a fucking zombie.
He's slow. Yeah, like, and he and him getting knocked out of the ring, he always, I mean, it's cool that he lands on his feet, but it's just slow. Like, there's nothing exciting about watching him. So yeah, it's quite underwhelming.
Yeah, the big red no-selling machine at this point, especially. Where he was a recent addition to the roster, so they were kind of obligated to make a big thing of him. Otherwise, you get a Kurgan situation or something where it's just like, why did we try to push Kurgan? Like, what was the point of that? Where it's like, you want to follow through with your investment. They invested a lot in Kane, and having him defeat a guy like Vader is a way of telling the audience, selling the audience on the fact that it's like, whoa, he smashed Vader. He must be a big, tough guy.
Well, he's also like a menacing presence. Like, he's scary and he's got an awesome entrance. Like, it's pretty badass. It's just unfortunate that he just doesn't, that's it. That's kind of his whole thing.
I think, like, say what you will about the man who portrays the character. That's a whole nother thing. But
that's a
whole nother podcast. Kane as a character, as a performer in ring, he could be inconsistent at times. But when he was on, like when he had his moveset dialed in and calibrated, one of the more consistent big tall guys in that company. Like, in case of emergency, insert Kane. Like, there's countless pay-per-views and countless feuds that had that kind of approach to them, and he usually would deliver in the in-ring stuff. Character, I always found kind of tedious, to be honest, but in like big, especially like multi-man matches, he always made a big impact. Like, his Rumble appearances in particular, he kind of famous for like getting tons of eliminations and stuff just because of his big no-selly kind of atmosphere that he carried. But I'll back Kane in terms of his in-ring ability. Like, again, it would take some while. It would take a few years for it to, like, crystallize, for, like, his moveset to develop and for him to kind of have it dialed in. But, yeah, here, this is kind of an awkward match because it doesn't help that, like, this is also, like, shop-worn Vader, which, love Vader. Great. One of the best big guys in the history of the whole damn art form. But he was beat up. He was ill a lot at this time, as far as I remember reading as well. Like just his body was betraying him. And you don't see too much evidence of it here, but this is a slightly diminished Vader in 1998, unfortunately.
Right. And I think he was, this wasn't long before he was on his way out of the company either.
Correct. And yeah, his attitude was probably not great either. Cause this is, remember, I mentioned this last week, Kyle. I sent you a video of it, actually. One, he had the Kuwait promo where he attacked a journalist and was subsequently, like, punished. Like, not so much monetarily, but, like, his reputation in the company. Like, the higher-ups looked down their nose at him and punished him. And then on top of that, Shawn Michaels, the top dog in the company, like, the chief draw for a while there, did what I showed you. He kind of publicly berated him on more than one occasion. And Vader was kind of in a really shitty position on the card, basically, in the company.
Yeah, I was going to say, I also don't think people liked him. I think he was a bit of a dickhead behind.
Like, he would work super snug. Like he was very, he was stiff in the other way. Like, he would knock your fucking block off if you let him. Him and Ken Shamrock, Kyle, you know how Ken Shamrock took that chair shot to the face from The Rock last week? Apparently, yes, Ken Shamrock's idea. yeah, Ken Shamrock. He was a friend of concussions, so he and Vader would do like borderline one, like unsanctioned matches where the name of the game was to attempt to destroy the other person in front of a live crowd.
Yeah, there was a couple times I want to say Shamrock has actually gone on record talked about this before, where like he and Vader, like without clearance, would go out there and like stiff arm each other for fucking real in the ring every time, because they're like, Vader already worked stiff in Japan and in WCW. Shamrock came from the UFC, and you know, you got those fucking two egos in the ring where it's like, okay, I did this shit for real, and Vader was like, well, I do this shit to people who think it isn't fucking real. So it's like, all right, man, that's but yeah, Shamrock straight up told Dwayne, he's like, hey man, how you feeling about Sammy Sosa these days? How you feeling about hitting a fucking home run on my skull? I kind of don't want to be on this shitty pay-per-view card this Sunday. Can you fucking just whack me real good? Jesus Christ. Just smash the shit out of him, dude.
More than once, too, apparently, Kyle. Like, yeah. Like this, the chair shot to the face thing was like an ongoing thing between The Rock and Shamrock. I didn't know that until I did a little bit of digging. Wow. But yeah, that was just one of many.
Dude, just get the flu or something. God.
Any highlights from this match that it sounds like not anybody liked?
The fucking credits, dude. Like, what? Like, this took forever. Like, this was agonizing for me. I'm like, this just sucks. The fire extinguisher comes back out. The prop, even the prop wrench that they have is just like, what the fuck is that? That's a piece of, that's just tape. That's tape wrapped around more tape.
Yeah, it's like paper mache and electrical tape, basically. Like it's. I mean, also I think they still had the red lights up to probably disguise the not so great construction of the prop.
I was gonna actually say that they didn't put the red lights on until after. Like this was so piss poor on the production side. So it was absolutely a fucking rubber like horror prop wrench. I've seen this exact wrench in fucking Spirit Halloween. Like that wrench has had some longevity of a shelf life as far as like productions. Like that company is doing big business. Hell, they probably boosted their sales. They're like, man, you ever see fucking Kane whack Vader in the face of one of these? Come on down to Horror Emporium.
Vince is on the line like, we need to order more prop wrenches.
I need a box. Out of the warehouse. Yeah. Somebody send me a pallet. Like what? What do you mean? Like, no, I want a pallet of boxes of wrenches to pure under the fire. Exactly. So no, it's fucked up because I think this might have been one of the first times they started not putting the red lights over the ring during Kane's matches, because they used to do that for a hot minute. Like he would wrestle under the red lights, and I remember this being significant. I was like, where the fuck are the red lights? Because he used to do it and would hide the shittiness of some of the moves and props like this. However, as a kid, that wrench looked fucking real. And I was like, okay, how did they fucking pull that off? You know, me being a kid, I was like, there's no way they used a rubber wrench in the ring. I'm like, what the fuck? It, obviously, like years later, I'm like, that is a goddamn Spirit Halloween looking fucking wrench, dude. Jesus Christ. But the fucking thing I remember the most about this match was he's going for the tombstone in the end and just whoop a fucking microphone hanging from the rafters, just whoop, right into the frame. I was like, what the fuck? Michael Buffer in the fucking match distracted me completely.
It takes you out of it. It does not help to maintain the illusion.
I was going to say, it broke the illusion.
Yeah, it totally breaks the illusion.
Dude, so so they talk about, I've noticed this, like the Nation of Domination, a combined weight of 1,000 pounds. Like, I don't know why they talk about how much they all weigh, but they keep talking about Vader's weight. Now, Vader was 4 bills. Like he's a big boy. But JR keeps adding like 9 pounds to his weight every time he brings it up. He's like, he's 400 pounds. He's 420 pounds. By the end of it, he's 468 pounds. I'm like, how much does he fucking weigh, dude? Write it down.
Kyle, it's the nature of lying. If you say 400 pounds, like 400 on the nose, then people will know that you're just guesstimating. If you say 409 pounds, that's an exact figure.
That's exact. Yeah, you know that.
That's exact. If you bungle it and you keep saying different numbers, then you fucked up. But to try to advocate, to play devil's advocate for the production crew, Richie, theory. I don't actually know, but just a guess. Just a guess about that. That fucking mic that Vader's poor dangling legs bop as he's on his way down to finish the match. I think maybe they lowered it prematurely because maybe the mic was to pick up the pyro explosion, the sound of it.
Mm. I was thinking that, or the impact of the wrench colliding with his face.
Something. Like yeah, I think there was a reason for it. I think somebody was just a little quick on the draw.
I'm making editing work for you now, but like, you literally, like, Vader gets picked up and you just hear.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Dude, so, yeah, I thought maybe Paul Bearer was going to come in and say something. He didn't get to say anything. He still makes his presence known. He's still there. What a waste. You have that little fucker come in and you don't let him say anything. Come on, man. He waddled all the way to that ring. You give him 90 seconds. You give him 90 seconds on that ring. You give the people what they want.
Well, God, I mean, damn it. Make it worth his while. He had to get down to that ring. That's a long God. Walk.
Fucking, he might be the best on the mic. The best to ever do it.
He gets to mug for the camera.
That poor bastard.
He's just he's the making fucking, the goofy face.
Until he gets on the ring apron. Oh, no. Right off the fucking apron, dude.
Ah, shit.
Oh, man. So, okay. So, can we talk about how this concludes? So, fucking Kane hits him with a quote-unquote wrench.
Yeah, and this is after he won, by the way.
After he's leaving. I think they turn on leaving. The red lights, turn the lights back on. He comes back to hit Vader in the head, which has caved his skull in, as what they're trying to tell us.
Yeah.
So now what they're going to do, they're trying to sell this so much that Vader is, he cannot be moved. So they bring in the paramedics. And what I mean, I bring in the paramedics, there's four paramedics and four referees trying to scoot this fucking... like barbell with fucking five plates on each side.
He's a mastodon, Kyle. He's a mastodon.
He's huge. He's huge. Like, how are you possibly going to wiggle this man? He's in the middle of the ring. Like, he's not even like on the edge where they just have to like push him off the side. They actually have to move his ass. So and I'm like, this is taking forever.
I skipped it, honestly. because you can do that now on pay-per-view. Yeah, like back in the day, you couldn't, but, it's funny you mention that because I distinctly remember Yokozuna being escorted out of the ring via forklift.
God,
they put him on a pallet and used a forklift, Kyle, to sell his mass, his size. So that was embarrassing, though. That's embarrassing. That's
mean,
sad.
Man.
That's just mean, dude. Man.
Yeah, and involved Vader. Go figure.
That's right. That's right. I think he like broke
Vader
his leg
bombed his fucking leg on the rope.
Yeah. You're right. Anyway, so Vader is taken out on a stretcher, essentially. It takes 10 minutes or whatever to get him out of the ring. And now we finally cut to the main event promo. This is a video package. Kyle's doing a little jig. He's strutting. He's creeping up to the camera.
I'm doing the badass Billy Gunn walk in.
We get this video package where we get that moment that Kyle had mentioned on catching up on Kayfabe not too long ago, where DX has Austin caught in the ropes and Shawn Michaels putting the heavyweight title in his face. And it's like, this is it, Austin. This is it, Austin. They make him say it like 30 times. Like, this is it, Austin. It's like, okay, I guess that's the line. But
I guess this stuff. Is it.
Yeah, powerful. So, main event. And Kyle R.A. showcased his Billy Gunn walk. He has a particular strut he does. And, of course, if you're going to have a multi-man main event, you got to trot the New Age Outlaws out first to get the crowd engaged. And you better believe we get you didn't know.
Your ass better call somebody.
To kick things off. Kyle, you're big on pointing out their attire. Did you happen to notice this time?
Yeah, last week was UK, which was super fun, but they didn't bring attention to it. This week, they are the, is it the Tennessee Oilers?
Correct.
It was supposed to be? Yeah, now the Tennessee Titans. but yeah, he's like, they're a better, why does he say they're a better state? I can't remember.
Because they're in the true South or some shit.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. True South. Yeah. Road Dogg is just trolling them. And I think it's working. I think some people are pretty legit pissed about this.
Yeah. This is heel 101, basically. Talk shit about the hometown. Like
get hit. Yeah.
Yeah. You Oklahoma City sweat hogs or whatever.
Jesus Christ. You inbred pieces of shit.
New Age Outlaws, they do their entrance. Then we get Triple H, sans Shawn Michaels, who, as we said, is at home washing his tights.
He's at home washing his tights!
Quite literally, probably. And funny enough, he does a proto water bottle entrance here. He brings his little Evian water bottle with him, so, or whatever.
I had to take a break here because I had to show Triple H's entrance. Steph didn't know. I'm like, actually, Triple H's entrance gets pretty big moving forward. Like, he has a cool thing. And I was like, you know about Mr. Ass, right? She's like, what? I'm like, have you not seen Mr. Ass's intro? Steph had a good time with the Mr. Ass theme song. I'm a nice man. Good time.
It's a pretty great one.
Yeah.
He likes to push him and shove him or whatever. And he likes to love him.
Loves to kick him.
Yep, he loves to kick him. I'm a nice man. I'm a nice man.
I'm an ass man.
But yeah, so Triple H comes out. He does his proto water bottle thing. As Kyle had said, it will become a legendary entrance, like one of the most tightly choreographed entrances in, you know, wrestling. And then the big reveal, the quote, big reveal.
Dude.
This is the saddest fucking thing.
Why?
This is so goddamn sad for the main event of the evening. The mystery man that has been hyped up from the beginning moments of the pay-per-view. Who wants to do the honors? Who is our mystery guest? Richie, go.
All the way from Jobberville, USA, turned into a stereotypical gang-related man from Puerto Rico, sub-stereo of USA. Sorry-ass Vega. I mean, Savio Vega. That poor motherfucker. What? Dude. That man was in a rock and a hard place. Like, quite literally. Like, he was feuding with The Rock, and now he's got to do this bullshit. Like, oh, God, man. It's sad because it's not even his fault, but what a fucking letdown.
I wanted to hug him. I wanted to reach through and hug him. I'm like, buddy, I'm sorry this happened to you. Like,
I am too. Like, and I say all that just like very jokingly, because Savio Vega was a fucking good wrestler, man. Like, was a great worker in the ring and could work with anybody.
Yeah.
This is proof positive he could work with anybody. But my God.
Work with fucking Mabel.
Yeah, dude. Exactly.
He could work with Mabel.
Right. But like, oh my God. Like, I could have. We could have probably had anybody else that would have made a little more sense, right?
Bradshaw, like anybody else, Bradshaw. For Christ's sake,
yeah, have him do, like, double duty, come out for a second. But he was a good guy, Kyle. That's the problem. Like, he was a face.
I'm looking through our dais. Like, throw fucking Goldust in here. Like, he would have been a squeaky wheel. Like, just throw him in for fun. Like, he's charismatic. He's got presence.
And also, you could probably get some fun character stuff out of his interactions with the other guys, where they're just like, yeah, are you sure you want him on the team? Like, I don't trust this guy. Like, that's kind of the space he occupied in the roster at this point. He was kind of an oddball.
I mean, yeah, it sucks because I was looking forward to this, and it wasn't until I got started on this endeavor, you're like, oh, you know that Shawn Michaels is injured, right? And I, what? He's like, he's not even at No Way Out. And I'm like, well, what the fuck? Like, that's what I was looking forward to. And I'm like, it is a huge letdown that we don't get to see that. But I guess maybe the thought was, it's like, he's so far removed from this. Like, nobody's going to really care. Everybody's here for Austin anyway. So I guess they're like, it doesn't really matter who we throw in.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, looking back on the history of the program at this point, like, there's an air of inevitability to Austin taking the title. Like, there didn't even really have to be a match. It's just a foregone conclusion that now is the moment. And as soon as Shawn Michaels is kind of, it's actually kind of works out well, where it's like, he is injured. He is not capable of delivering in ring as well or as often as he used to be able to. He's on his way out for a while. But it's kind of okay. Because he's playing up the chicken shit heel stuff, where he's essentially running away from the hero who we all know has the grit and the guts to beat him. It's just a matter of getting him to the dance and getting his hands on him. So we're playing this game of keep away it's aggravating, especially for like a live crowd or whatever, who wants to see the hottest names on the card or whatever. But in the grand scheme of things, on the road to WrestleMania, it works out fine. But in terms of just this crowd, this card in isolation, it kind of sucks. And especially having the grand reveal be Savio Vega, who you see on the card every week, paired up with whoever the fuck. And yes, as Richie had said, he's an even hand. He can go with anybody. But nobody's a huge fan of Savio Vega. Nobody pops for Savio Vega. He can put on a great match with anybody, but it's not a match that you're like thoroughly emotionally invested in. It's just a technically solid one. But walk with me here, Richie. This has happened many times in the history of WWF. Would this not be a in case of emergency, insert Sid moment?
Right. Yeah.
It's happened so many goddamn times in the history of wrestling.
Which, weirdly enough, it was Shawn Michaels kind of filled the Savio Vega role a few years earlier at Survivor Series 1993 when he wrestled with King's Knights or whatever the fuck. He wrestled with Lawler's Knights against the Hart family.
The Survivor Series match where they swapped out Jerry Lawler for Shawn Michaels and had him paired up with just the fucking Putty Patrol in the form of the quote Knights. When you have a guy named Jerry the King Lawler, it kind of makes sense when you have the Putty Patrol, aka the Knights. When you have the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, who just showed up one day and you pair him up with the Knights, it doesn't make a lick of sense.
Let me tell you how you make that make perfect sense. Just a small little sidebar here.
Yo.
HBK. Heartbreak Kid. Why couldn't he have just been the Heartbreak King for one night?
I mean, hey, King Booker, King Barrett. We've had other Macho King. We've had plenty of people.
For a day.
He could be king for a day. That could be a fun thing during promos throughout the night.
Fucking hire me, WWE.
God damn, seriously, get Richie in the writer's room. Shit. So yeah, Savio Vega is the mystery man who is part of the heel team. He is subbing in for Shawn Michaels here. And we start to get the parade of entrances from our face team. First one is Owen Hart, who, talk about rocking a hard place. That would be him at this point in his career with WWF. He gets a decent pop, though, because he's Owen fucking Hart, and he delivers. Chainsaw Charlie, to quote JR, he's middle-aged and crazy.
Oh, I'm sorry. The word is, sorry, I had to write that down. Give me a sec. He may be crazy, middle-aged, and crippled, but something else.
He comes out with Cactus Jack, a.k.a. Mick Foley, and they have a whole cart full of toys, a.k.a. weapons to be used. Oh, and they do the cool thing where they're not even at the ring, but they're already chucking that shit into the ring.
Mick Foley's just like, fuck, yes. He's so fucking jacked, dude. He's so excited.
He's got like the biggest hate boner ever, ready to beat the shit out of everybody.
I'm gonna fuck you up with this trash can lid. Oh.
And I'm gonna cart this chainsaw out here and cut you up with the non-existent blades.
Hey, Mick, let's get in there and give the people a good show. Try not to bleed on me too much. That's my job. Hey,
could you fucking control your blood flow this time?
Try to lace up my boots, pussy.
Sorry. I wish I could have a mic strapped to Terry Funk during the match. Just hear all the things he's saying.
Just shit talking the whole time.
No, he'd be super affable and just calm. It's like, okay, throw me into the turnbuckle there, Hunter. Give me that chair to the head, Hunter. Come on.
So on that, like that wrestling, like the injuries that the wrestlers take promo where Shawn Michaels had 12 concussions.
I've had surgery 5 times in my left knee.
What did Mick Foley have a thing on that? I don't recall.
They probably pushed him into the back room and said, Mick, this is not you for you.
Do not tell the people what's wrong with you.
We already know what's wrong with you.
Talk to the children. Don't give them any ideas.
He's doing the scene from fucking Forrest Gump where Bubba's talking about all the shrimp, but he's just talking about all the injuries he's had. Like, I got a broken leg, took my kneecap on the outside of where it's supposed to be. Broken ankle, broken ankle,
lost an ear. Like,
just lost an ear.
I've been dead three times.
28 of those enough. Things where you hit your head and you can't. I can't think of what they are. Anyway.
Hard cut to the WWF logo. Don't try this at home.
Don't do this at home, kids.
After all that, though, after we're throwing weapons into the ring, the crowd asplodes. The crowd absolutely goes incendiary as the glass breaks and Stone Cold Steve Austin, his entrance hits. So match kicks off and it's bedlam, it's mayhem, it's chaos. There is no goddamn roadmap for this match until more than halfway through. Like it isn't a match until more than halfway through. It's like, we're just going. And it's funny because the production, the camera positions and the editing, you can tell like the truck doesn't know what the fuck is happening. Cause it's just like, just everybody's doing stuff. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
It's pretty crazy. I like what's happening off the mat, the Billy Gunn and Stone Cold thing that's going on the side. That's pretty fun. I thought that was pretty cool. But something cool happens with this where it comes off, it explodes, and then we start getting the gadgets and everybody else. And then Stone Cold just kind of disappears for a bit. Like, I forgot he was there. And then he pops back up, and I'm like, oh shit, I forgot Stone Cold's here. And the crowd just just lights right back up again. It's kind of neat how they did that.
That's wrestling, like, in a nutshell, is responding to the crowd, like knowing what the audience needs when they need it, because they determined that, hey, with that crowd reaction, just him walking down the ramp, this guy can fog a mirror and people will buy a ticket. So maybe give him a dose, have him open the match and do some cool shit with Billy Gunn, and then do some hardcore wrestling outside the ring and stuff, and then quietly have him recede like out of the action, and then reserve him for the big finish, which pays off. Like, it's well choreographed. Like, the timing of it is like, they get you salivating for his return to the action. And as soon as he gets that tag, it's like, damn, like, one, he got to rest so he could be tight and like on point when it comes to delivering all of his moves, but two, you had to wait for it, and sometimes that's what you need in order to appreciate things the most.
Dude, I feel bad, like, poor China, like, she is jacked, like, all those protein farts and no skulls to crack. Like, she's just like off to this, she's literally just watching it doing nothing, and I'm sitting there and I'm just like, man, like, I seem to remember her doing more stuff. So I wanted to ask you guys, like, I found like a compilation of her doing stuff. And I think does she do Trish or Sable? She actually like military presses a girl and throws her ass down. She's pretty badass. So it's pretty cool. But is she like the first like female wrestler? Like, it seems like it's just been like Sable and Sunny. I'm assuming they've had like there've been like where she's built like one of the guys, not like one of the girls. Like, she's built like one of the fellas.
She's like the first one like with that kind of build that I can recall. WWF did have, they flirted with having a women's title for a while there. They had Alundra Blaze at one point, and a lot of Joshi wrestlers, a lot of Japanese wrestlers kind of imported to just be fed to her essentially, but they never really followed through on it and developed the roster. And eventually she would leave for WCW. She'd do the Riddick Bowe belt in the trash can thing.
Yep.
But yeah, eventually they would resurrect, they would do the Divas belt thing, and they would kind of have a division again. But Richie, do you know of anyone like prior to China that had her kind of build in wrestling?
Well, really and truly, like, to kind of piggyback on the Alundra Blaze thing, it's like all the Joshi chicks that worked with Alundra Blaze were people that she brought over from Japan, that she was working with in Japan, which I thought was cool of her to like showcase like all the shit that they were doing over there. And it's a shame it never caught on, because I thought some of those matches are kind of underrated. Like, she had great matches with like Bull Nakano. I think Bull Nakano, outside of China, as far as like somebody that just had a fucking reputation for just beating the shit out of you and could just beat the shit out of you at any given moment, Bull Nakano was somebody that was just like, Yeah, she could hang. I think she could hang with some of the dudes, to be quite fucking honest. But in this era, in this time, I don't know that any wrestler, like any woman wrestler on the roster or up until then, had that intensity or that build to the point where, like, they did have a women's title that came around, I think, mid-year. Like, they had a women's championship for a hot minute before, like, the Divas title had even come around. But they were actually, like, flirting with the idea of giving China work with the men. Yeah. Because, like, China would eventually become the Intercontinental Champion, like, would hold, like, some of the men's championships and stuff like that. And I think that kind of kicked the door open for what we have now. Like, a lot of promotions nowadays actually have, like, intergender matches where, like, I know they've had a couple of, like, the women hold, like, the World Heavyweight Championship in a couple of companies, like, things like that, where they're just doing a crossover. But, like, the difference between those and China was that on paper and visually, China was much more believable of an opponent for some of the men on that roster because she was a big old bitch. Like, God, like, seriously, God rest her soul. I fucking loved Joanie. I thought Joanie was, like, one of the sweetest fucking souls that this business ever had, and it took huge advantage of her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she quite frankly deserved better, honestly. But, you know, I'm happy that we got what we had when she was around. Like, I thought she was a fucking fantastic person. And, goddamn, dude, like, could have worked with the man if they actually gave her enough time and really, really, like, sat with her and trained her more. Oh my God, they could have had so much more, you know, from her.
This was the missed opportunity. This was the opportunity to, like, instead of, like, we're going to bring in somebody else to wrestle, instead of building that up, have her come in and do some stuff. Like, actually have her go toe to toe with Stone Cold. I thought she was going to fucking stun his ass or do something and walk it off. I'm like, that would be fucking brilliant.
I was with Kyle at that age when I watched this pay-per-view. I swear up and down that I was like, China's going to be the fucking partner.
Yeah, it didn't click until Kyle was talking just now. But yeah, actually, I think the problem was that she wasn't trained yet. But that would have been a perfect opportunity for that. And you easily could have still done it, just kind of keep her out of the majority of the action, like, just, you know, focus on offense in the form of, like, weapons and stuff, like, just stay away from the technical stuff, protect her, you know, give her an opportunity to shine. That actually could have worked really well, like, and you know, the fourth or fifth man or whatever is a woman in the form of China, yeah. Who you no all respond to really well.
No one would see it coming if she just came out of fucking nowhere and got his ass. And yeah, it was.
Yeah, no, that actually would have worked really well. Just have her not come out with Triple H and then have a separate entrance for her.
And you literally Stone Cold stun the home crowd here. Like, we thought that the Rattlesnake was going to walk with this shit, and then she just takes it right from underneath him. I love that
flow. Yeah. Could have had a moment where DX getting there, because I'm counting the Outlaws as DX at this point because they would join the stable not long after. You have DX on the apron. Maybe they get their asses handed to them. There's a hot tag needed, even though they're the heel group. And I didn't understand this part where it was a non-sanctioned anything goes, but they still had tag rules in place. What the fuck?
That was so weird. So weird. Right, that was some R-Truth shit where it's like,
right.
You forgot Jimmy. The rules.
Mm-hmm. But have them on the apron. There's nobody to fucking tag in. Out of nowhere, China hops on the apron and fucking tags in. There's your fourth person.
Yeah. No rules, so it doesn't matter.
You know? Exactly. There's your fourth fucking
there
person.
There you go. Yeah. Just have them come out without an additional player. And that's
like it. Exactly.
Down, like, a person or something.
Because it's unassuming.
Yeah.
You know? It's completely unassuming. So
my God, China tagged in. China's in. Dude,
that crowd would have lit up. I mean, think about how this ends. Like, Stone Cold ends up, you know, he stuns badass Billy Gunn. He gets the win. He gets the W.
Yeah.
And then China's like stepping to him. And he's like, you know, walking off. And then he ends up stunning her. I have to admit, I'm like, that was awesome. He did just stun China. It was pretty cool. But that's when I thought, I'm like, I thought she was going to take him here.
Yeah. As we've talked about, it's like, that's a missed opportunity. That could have been a highlight to, you know, an otherwise somewhat disappointing card. But during this match, I know it's a clusterfuck, but did you guys have any highlights or, like, moments that you wanted to point out? Because I have a couple that I thought were just hilarious. I will point out that there's a great bit where Terry Funk just will not die.
Like, is it, like, just lay it into me, brother.
Like, just give it to me, because Road Dogg power bombs Terry Funk between two chairs. Billy Gunn pile drives Terry Funk onto a trash can lid. This all happens in sequence. I caught the Road Dogg taking a swig of something. It's like he needed to hydrate or something during the match. I mean, that seems like a very Road Dogg move. But my favorite part in the whole match is when Austin throws a trash can across the ring at Billy Gunn. The timing of it and the impact is spectacular. Where it's like he's not the legal man. In this unsanctioned match, but it just, the camera pans over and you just see Austin with a trash can over his head, and it's just a spiteful toss where he's like, "I'm not even in the ring yet."
See,
I want to be.
I think that the chemistry that Stone Cold and Mr. Ass have, I think that they have at Mr. Ass can match his intensity. Like I said, he can sell that clothesline. He can sell that stunner. Yeah. And I think what they have together is really good. But unfortunately, we don't get a ton of it. But I think those pretty much when they are against each other is probably.
Yeah. Richie, did the two of them have interactions before this particular phase of their career? I'm curious.
Austin and Billy?
Yeah. Because Austin, I always forget that he'd been around the world. Like, he'd already done WCW and ECW by this point.
Well, Billy had largely been just around the Fed from like 1993 onward, you know, like Smoking Guns tag team. And
yeah.
I feel like maybe early on they did whenever, and I might be right or wrong, because like I don't have like, you know, obviously like a list of matches in front of me, but I feel like during either Ringmaster run or maybe during like early like Stone Cold Steve Austin before he became Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, when he first was like kind of kicking that moniker around and he was still wrestling matches on Superstars and he was still wrestling on like Action Zone, you know, this is a pre-tape shit, you know.
Yeah,
maybe he would get, I don't know, maybe he would get like an opening match, dark match on Raw. Maybe he wrestled Billy Gunn on those shows, you know. Maybe they had a couple matches, because like, as you know, like the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn were just thrown together because who the fuck are these two? Like, they literally had creative had nothing for them. And they were like, here, make it work.
And yeah, because wasn't Road Dogg the roadie and then Jarrett left? And that's like, what do we do with the roadie?
Yeah, and then the roadie became the Double J Jesse James at that point. Like, he became the real Double J Jesse James. And then Billy Gunn just became like whatever the fuck he was, you know. Like, he really didn't have a gimmick. Like, neither of them had a gimmick. They were kind of regulated to just jobber roles on you know, the Saturday show, and they stuck him as a tag team, and they started having chemistry, and then it's like, you know, next thing you know, they started kind of coming into their own, like when they were given free reign, which it's what you do when you have two people with chemistry. You just like, hey, why don't you just take the leash off and see what they can do. But as far as Billy and Austin go, I think maybe in-ring chemistry and, like, you know, attitude chemistry was natural for them.
Mm-hmm.
I said Road Dogg's good on the mic. From what I understand, Badass Billy Gunn he's not really a mic guy.
I've never thought of him as such. He's affable. Like, he's just kind of naturally affable and charismatic, but not like exactly a talker as far as I think of him.
No, Road Billy's Dogg's good funny. In short bursts.
Yeah, short bursts. Like he's good at punctuation. Like, he's good at being the hype man for someone else.
Yes, but Billy, of the two, is the in-ring guy. To this day, moves just like he did then. Like, he's pushing 60, and he's still fucking ripped and looks good in-ring. And he can go with, like, a lot of the younger guys. It's fucking crazy.
I'm always telling Kyle that. My brother's always quick to point out that's, like, amongst the AEW roster, Billy Gunn is inarguably like one of the bigger more impressive guys despite his age and miles. Like, it's pretty insane.
Yeah, he looks like a fucking giant in there. He's 6'4" and looks like a 7-foot guy amongst
that's the important distinction, is that Matt's like, on the AEW roster, he looks like a goddamn gorilla. Like, he's enormous. Consummate worker. He's always been great. But Yeah, as far as highlights go, those were really the big ones. There's a lot of weapons action. That's, again, I was into this kind of stuff when I was a kid, so this was kind of like taking me back to just all the trash cans and no kendo sticks as far as I saw, unfortunately, but we get some chair shots and stuff. And as Kyle had said, Austin gets essentially the hot tag to win it. Stunners for everyone, basically. Stunners around the world.
You get a stunner, and you get a stunner.
I mean, no joke. That's essentially what it is. And yeah, he gets the finish, and he also stuns China. And I believe he calls for a mic just so he can give an, oh, hell yeah, to the live crowd, which probably made their day. But yeah, that's the conclusion of the card. Any thoughts, feelings, concluding thoughts on the show?
I didn't think for a hot minute there was going to be any way out of this pay-per-view.
Not a fan.
Very, very appropriately titled. They had me in a fucking chokehold, an illegal chokehold, for 2 hours and 45 minutes of my fucking life.
We were caught in a rest hold for 3 hours in Texas.
Oh, God.
We're gonna do Hell in a Cell and WrestleMania, I'm pretty sure. Like, I think I really want to see those, and I feel like, Trevor, I don't feel like I'm going to get a lot of pushback from you on this.
I think it's safe to assume you'll get what you want. at the very least, Kyle, you have to see WrestleMania.
Yeah,
yeah, I need to see how this season ends.
Yeah,
Mania 14 is a fucking excellent card. It's an excellent card.
Well, there you go. You heard it from the wrestling aficionado in the room. You heard it, Kyle.
Yeah, a lot of people are not very fond of certain manias, like WrestleMania 14, many consider to be the official kickoff of the Attitude Era. A lot of people heavily consider that Mania to be the opening chapter of Out with the Old, In with the New. So there's still a lot of transition match-wise with who's wrestling, what's happening on the card. Some matches may fall flat in execution, and on paper it looks good, but I will say, like, the matches that are on there, like, I remembered being fun, and that's what it's all about. I think WrestleMania 14 was fun above all else.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It made so much goddamn money and publicity for the company, but what Richie was saying is, I think, very true, because just as evidenced by this card, by No Way Out from 1998, like, you can tell there's a lack of cohesion in the creative direction. We're kind of patching things together. We haven't built the road just yet, but like, once WrestleMania 14 happens and we get, as you say, the out with the old, in with the new, like, more officially, like, it starts to coalesce into something special, like really, really special. Like, they would figure out what it was supposed to be during this time period. But Kyle, being as you served as the catalyst for us even doing this conversation, No Way Out in Texas, you've finally seen it. How do you feel about it?
It's
fine. I'm sorry.
It was fine. I was happy to see Stone Cold show up, obviously, but I wanted that showdown with Shawn Michaels, and I just didn't get it. And I don't think I'm ever going to get a good Stone Cold versus Shawn Michaels fight. Like, we never got fucking McGregor and Diaz, the Diaz brother we wanted to see McGregor fight. You know,
Nick.
Just never happened.
Funny story. Shawn and Austin made a pretty good tag team at one point.
Really?
Yeah, they were tag team champions at one point during like 1996, I think, like either 96 or 97.
Wow, I didn't know about that.
That was a thing. That was definitely a thing. So, yeah, 96 to 98, like between, there were some interesting happenings.
If you had to point to a truly great match between the two of them against each other, Richie, do you have one? Because WrestleMania, like, I hate to say it, unfortunately, that's not going to be it. I mean, it is a match. Historically, it's of the utmost importance, but in terms of, like, in-ring quality, I would never say that that's anyone's best work.
I don't know, man, because it seems like they didn't have, like, a lot of them. I feel like they had a couple of them on Raw, like during that era where I was talking about where they were tag champions or whatever the fuck. I feel like they had a couple matches on Raw that probably were better than the Mania match itself, although the Mania match is the most high profiled one. They do, however, if I remember right, they have a match at, don't quote me on this, I think they have a match at King of the Ring 1997. I feel like they had a match at King of the Ring in 1997.
I'll have to look into that. I don't actually know, but I would love to see that. But yeah, Kyle, just so you know, Steve Austin and Bret Hart had a program prior to this that was really special. So that there was no room for him and Shawn Michaels kind of to be put together until 1998, basically.
They 100% did have a match at King of the Ring 1997.
Okay. I'll have to look that up. I'm curious. And, I love King of the Ring. I love tournaments. Tournaments are one of my favorite things.
Yeah. So the thing that I remember the most that I'm actually like seeing this is that I do fucking remember that match. And that was, sadly, that's the better of the two. Like, that's the better of the two that were on pay-per-view was the 97 King of the Ring match they had.
I mean, that's often the case. That's kind of the thing when your body of work is so expansive, like a lot of times what is remembered best by history has to do with when and where it happened rather than its actual quality, where it's like, I think Chris Jericho had like a quote about like, you could have the best match in the world, but if it takes place in some podunk town that only five people saw, history's not going to remember it. But if you had a decent match at WrestleMania, then everybody can reference that. It has this like cultural touchstone effect. But yeah, King of the Ring 97, I'll have to look into that. Anyway, I believe that's about it for our conversation about WWF In Your House, No Way Out of Texas from 1998. Richie, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you for joining.
Yeah, this was a blast.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. I'm always down to come talk shop about wrestling, movies, like literally anything. So,
well, I'm just glad to have an opportunity to talk with you, because really this opportunity came out of me just kind of texting you out of the blue and just being like, hey, how you doing? You okay? You alive? You want to talk wrestling? Okay, let's do it.
hell, kid, I'll run the ropes with you.
It's funny because you could have told me like, oh man, I'm down to the dumps. Like life's really rough right now. I'm like, yeah, that's okay. How about you come talk wrestling? Like, I don't care.
I don't care. We're pulling you out of retirement, son.
But as is customary, being as it is a podcast, Richie, would you like to take this opportunity to let folks on the internets know what you're all about and what you got going on out there?
Well, I did over 300 episodes of a podcast called Super Media Bros Podcast. You've probably actually heard of it if you've listened to this podcast, because I've talked with Trevor plenty of times before. However, if you've never heard of it, we have over 300 episodes. You can subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube, because our website is actually non-existent right now. But we do have a link tree with all of our stuff in there, so you can follow. I'm still on the social media accounts at Super Media Bros _ on Twitter. Right now, I am running a solo podcast dedicated to the rock band Ghost, and it is called Gonst FM Off Air. We just started up, and there's like 7 episodes out as of this recording, and you can follow that on Apple or Spotify or YouTube as well. So that's what I've got going on in internet land these days.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. You were telling me about the Ghost show, and it sounds like you're just having a great time doing it, so more power to you.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, dude. I get to talk with a lot of cool people and content creators and, you know, people that are passionate about, like, doing music and art-based stuff. So it's a lot of fun. So
glad to hear it, man. But as for ourselves, Kyle and I, the show is, of course, Catching Up on Cinema. You've been listening to it for the past, I don't know how many hours, but much like Richie, our website exists. You probably can't get to it, but it is catchinguponcinema.com. And in theory, it should include links to all of our episodes in our back catalog, of which there's like 400 plus at this point, Kyle. Jesus Christ, we work hard for no money. If you'd like to reach out to us on the social medias, though, meaning just me, Kyle doesn't have a social media presence. He's a smart person in that way. You can find us on the Twitter /X at Catching Cinema, as well as the Instagram at Catching Up on Cinema. So feel free to hit me up at either of those.
And the podcast is available on pretty much every platform you can imagine, including Bitcade. So fucking Google it.
Google it.
And that being said, thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time.